The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Rolene Marks, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, I'm good, and you? Well, you know, I believe a lot of things can be solved with whiskey.
Yeah, it's true. We don't even notice load shedding if you have enough whiskey. That's my theory. Well, the other alternative to whiskey is ice cream. And you know what they say, that if you, just because the answer to your problems doesn't lie in the bottom of a tub of ice cream, doesn't mean you shouldn't keep looking.
Well, I tell you, there have been many times over the past year where I've wondered to myself, why is my ice cream talking?
Right.
But
exactly.
Apparently it has been silenced over the past week. So should we tell our lovely listeners what we are talking about?
Yes, let's talk about that. What is the Ben and Jerry's story?
Well, the Ben & Jerry's boycott has officially melted, but not without some controversy, mostly actually from Ben and Jerry themselves. But let's take a look at what has transpired. Just around a year ago, Ben & Jerry's, who were acquired by Unilever in 2000, announced that they would no longer be selling their ice cream in what they call the occupied territories, what we call the West Bank and East Jerusalem, or Judea and Samaria, and that they would no longer be continuing their licensing agreement with the Israeli manufacturer. So I know many of you want to know, does our food need a political opinion? I am of the opinion that no, I don't want to hear what my food's political opinions are at any time. I just want to enjoy it. But what has ensued over the last year are very, very vociferous campaigns, both by the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Group, who actually crowed over this, saw it as a significant victory, and the anti-BDS group, which would be many states in the United States who have enacted anti-BDS legislation, and many of them actually threatened Unilever, the holding company, that we will be withdrawing our pension funds should you go ahead with this boycott. And that amounted to hundreds of millions of dollars. And Unilever consulted as well with various other groups, some of them the International Legal Forum, Stand With Us, many other organizations, as well as the Israeli government. Now, what many people forget is that Israel has its own anti-discrimination laws in place. Yes, people, we do. Mm-hmm. You cannot discriminate against businesses or employers based on where they are situated. And a boycott of Ben & Jerry's or the ending of the manufacturing deal would see the loss of not just Israeli jobs, but Palestinian jobs as well. And I fail to see how you're going to accomplish any kind of peace by denying people ice cream. You're just going to make them more for cream towered. But earlier this week, our foreign ministry, along with our economy ministry, as well as Unilever, released statements saying that they had reached an agreement, and Unilever released quite a firm statement. They said that they are very proud of their business dealings in Israel, and that when they acquired Ben & Jerry's in 2000, they said that Ben & Jerry's could have independence, or their board could have independence on social issues, but not financial and operational. And they feel that Ben & Jerry's was not forthcoming with all this information, and they had a right to step in. And step in they did. They said that Ben & Jerry's will be continuing to sell their ice cream. They will be continuing the manufacturing agreement with the Israeli manufacturer, who will now sell Ben & Jerry's with Arabic and Hebrew branding. And they're also issued a very, very firm statement against anti-Semitism. They said that they don't see that why anti-Semitism should be tolerated in any society, and they never have and never will be supporting BDS. Well, I know BDS are not going to be depression eating their sorrows in a tub of Ben & Jerry's, I can tell you that much.
So what's really interesting is that that Unilever themselves have come out not just to say that they're not supporting this, but in fact moved in the other direction and said, we will never support BDS type of campaign. So they've actually, it's actually in a way backfired for Ben and Jerry's and for the BDS in the sense that it forced Unilever to make a, to take a stand on this. And the stand that they took is in fact very supportive of Israel.
Very supportive, and they're also very important, and it's something that you and I have addressed on this show in the last couple of weeks. They specifically used the word anti-Semitism. Now, what is absolutely astounding is that Ben and Jerry themselves have come out with their own statement via Twitter saying that they are aware of Unilever's decision, and they don't support it because it doesn't sit with their social consciousness. So Unilever have specifically used the words anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated. Does this mean that Ben and Jerry, who are Jewish themselves, effectively endorse an anti-Semitic movement? Of course, we've heard from Omar Shakir and various other activists who are very unimpressed with the decision by Unilever. And I'm actually quite amazed that Ben and Jerry find this decision to be against their social morals and social conscience, but yet are still very happy to sell their ice cream in China and to states in their own country whose ethos or rulings are in direct contradiction to what they believe.
Yeah, it's just such a fascinating, and Unilever, of course, is very, very significant, has a very significant interest in Israel. And I saw on their statement, they spoke about the number of employees, the number of products. It's massive. I didn't realize just how significant Unilever's operations in Israel are.
Unilever is a massive, massive operation. I noticed they even wrote to...
You see, you need a double whiskey. I'm telling you, this is the way to go.
Excuse me, everybody.
No, it's a thing. Yeah, you've got to get that that whiskey poured immediately after this. But so that's the Unilever decision. The other subjects, of course, that we want to talk about is that Yair Lapid has become the prime minister. We also want to talk about Saudi Arabia and the visit of the anti-Semitism envoy. But Rolene, if you are feeling okay, can we talk about Lapid becoming prime minister?
We absolutely can, and I did have a bit of a giggle to myself because we have had the official dissolving of the Knesset. This took place yesterday after a few delays, and the official handover, very, very moving, very beautiful handover between former Prime Minister Bennett and now Prime Minister Yair Lapid. But I did have a giggle to myself at the amount of people on Twitter saying, wow, Israel has the world's best looking Prime Minister.
Oh, that's so funny.
What can I say? For our ladies out there who keep offering me casseroles to take to the ambassador of the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and the head of Mossad, well, ladies, do you want to add Prime Minister Lapid to the list? Because it seems everybody else seems to want to send him a casserole or something.
So, how empowered is he as Prime Minister? I mean, knowing, of course, that government has been dissolved, he's going to stand in until November. What kind of a role is this?
Well, what's very interesting is yesterday in the handover, which I must stress was an extremely moving ceremony. They sat together, a lot of praise for former Prime Minister Bennett by Lapid and by Benny Gantz from different political parties, saying, you know, we might not have agreed on everything, but we really came together, we sat together, and you have been a great leader. Bennett handed over to Lapid. This is contrary to the previous Prime Minister, who did not sit and do a handover and is reported to have actually shredded important documents. And Lapid and Bennett did the ceremony. Bennett toasted Lapid. He actually put his hands on his head and made a bracha, a blessing.
Amazing.
Over him.
Oh, I love that.
Very beautiful. And Lapid said, you know, my mother did the same thing to me this morning. And it was just such a symbol of how to do things like absolute menshes. And Lapid, very soon after being sworn in, went to Yad Vashem, to the Hall of Remembrance. He made an oath to his father that he will put the security of Israel above all else, and then late in the day met with President Herzog. But all this aside, make no mistake, the race is on. We've got a former Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, now head of the opposition, the leader of Likud, who very much wants that office back in his sight and is going to do everything he can to make sure that that happens. So the person who's got the most to prove now is Yair Lapid. He's got 4 months to prove to Israelis and to the Israeli electorate if he is worth staying in the position of Prime Minister. And I've seen all sorts of opinions from people. You know, he's not the one we elected. You know, he's too left for me. Yair Lapid, the chair of Yesh Atid, very, very firmly in the center. But make no mistake, this is a man who's very, very tough when it comes to issues of security. And I think this is what people don't understand. You don't only have one political leader in Israel that takes the security, the safety of Israel seriously. We have leaders on the left or on the right or on the center, there are some things that are indisputable, and one of that is the security and the safety of the state of Israel. And that's important to understand. There's more disagreements on internal domestic issues than there are on the big issues. And we also have to understand that leaders are fallible. They're not always going to be there till the end of time. And when you don't create succession, you run into problems. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how the election yet again, I don't know, how would we say for the third time we get ice cream, for the fifth time do we get whiskey? I don't know.
Yeah.
But really, We've got quite a fascinating race on. We've got a former prime minister itching to get back into office, and we've now got an interim prime minister itching to retain control of the office.
Yeah, it is going to be a fascinating few months. Let's just talk about Saudi Arabia.
Well, this fascinates me because this is a story that has really gone under the radar, and to me it is massive. Saudi Arabia hosted the U.S. Special Envoy on Anti-Semitism, Deborah Lipstadt. Many of you are familiar with her. She is probably the world's most eminent expert on anti-Semitism and the Holocaust. I urge you to check out the movie Denial, which is all about her court case with David Irving, a highly, highly respected individual. And this past week, she has been in Saudi Arabia. This is her first international visit where she has been speaking about fighting anti-Semitism, teaching about Jewish history and culture. And she lauded the Saudis. She said she's absolutely overwhelmed by their commitment. And last night on Twitter, a tweet by the Saudi Foreign Ministry went largely ignored by the Israeli media. Except for me, who spends far too much time on Twitter, where they actually said, you know, we're proud to welcome Special Envoy Deborah Lipstadt. We discussed the importance of fighting anti-Semitism in all ways it manifests. Now, we've seen a remarkable change in the Middle East. The United Arab Emirates, the Bahrainis, the Moroccans, now the Saudis really leading, really being the vanguard in the fight against anti-Semitism. And they're doing this by instituting Jewish education. And it astounds me, Howard, that we haven't seen this trend filter to Western countries who have a lot to say when people perch upon their pedestals.
It's actually so amazing that this is happening, and as many of the difficult things that we're seeing around the world and Iran and all of the other issues, when you hear these stories, it just really does fill you with hope, because you can see how things can go from a very, very hostile and unfriendly relationship to one that is really looking at all of the issues and all of the challenges that were in the past. And I think that is just remarkable.
It is remarkable. And we have had some very Fascinating words, a little bit of a riddle coming in from US President Biden, who is headed to the Middle East in 2 weeks' time, who is hinting that we could be in for some interesting announcements coming from the Middle East. In fact, he said he is going to deepen Israeli integration in the region. So what does this mean? Should we take out the normalization bingo cards and see who will be next? But I hope I'm not too optimistic, but I'm bracing myself for a major announcement. I hope I get to break it right here.
Absolutely. That would really, really be amazing. Do we know of any other conversations that are taking place? Or is this generally done under wraps?
We don't know too much. We know that he's coming to Israel. We have been asked to shorten the welcome ceremony for President Biden. Apparently, some are citing due to his advanced age. Read into that what you want. He will meet with Prime Minister Lapid. He will meet with the head of the opposition, Netanyahu. I'm sure with the military and security establishment, he will meet with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. This is standard procedure for any foreign dignitary that comes to Israel, and then he's off to Saudi. And I think it's the Saudi trip we're going to be watching very carefully.
Absolutely right. And just like that, it is 8 o'clock. Rolien Marks, thank you as always. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, a fantastic weekend. And of course, we'll catch you next week.